Hey guys, Adam Ray here. Welcome back to a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast. I'm backstage in Portland, Oregon, opening up for the Impractical Jokers. Been a blast. Thanks to everybody that came out in Seattle and tonight in Portland. We'll be with these guys May 5th and 6th in Utah and then Denver. Come out and see us there. And then May 10th, they'll be at Red Rocks in Denver. But I digress. Today's episode is a special one. Big Jay Oakerson is our guest. First time on the podcast. He's got a new special out called Dog Belly on YouTube. Click right here, go see that, and then click right here and subscribe to the podcast so you can be all caught up on clips, episodes. Of course, subscribe on Spotify and iTunes as well so you can make sure to get all the ALN episodes. We've got a bunch of bangers coming up, but today's episode is one of my favorites. Jay's one of my favorite comics. He's a sweet fucking dude. He's a dad. He's a beast of a comic, and his stories and the conversation is one to not be missed. So enjoy this one. Go follow Jay on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And again, check out the special Dog Belly on YouTube, streaming right now. Tour dates for me, adamraycomedy.com. Coming up, I'm going to be with Harlan William at Joe Rogan's Mothership Club, April 14th, excuse me, through the 16th. And then Moon Tower Comedy Club, April 19th through the 22nd, also in Austin, Texas. May 18th through the 20th, I will be in Atlanta at the Punchline. And then May 25th through the 28th, West Palm Beach, at the Improv out there in Florida. Come out and see your boy, adamraycomedy.com for tickets, adamraycomedy.com for tour dates, merch, videos, and that's it. I'll be in Atlanta this week shooting a movie, and more coming. Enjoy the episode. I love you. Bye.
Hey, it's Herbert, and you're listening to the About Last Night podcast, you slippery little son of a bitch.
You know any other dwarfs besides Brad Williams? And yeah, that's how we're starting the show.
Yeah. Nick Novicki.
Oh, nice. Okay, other than Nick.
No, that's it.
Only funny dwarfs.
Yeah,
only. Now, is that on purpose?
Oh, and not no, but I'm aware of many others, though.
Yeah. I think that's half the battle. And there was no pun intended there. But
whatever happened to Bridget the Midget? What a career.
The name itself.
The premier midget porn star. Took monster cocks.
Yeah. And lived to tell about it.
And lived to tell the story. Or did she? I have no idea where she's at.
I put her in the same category. You know, sometimes, I don't know who you do this with, like Bob Barker for me happened 3 days ago. And I think Bob's popping up for a lot of people in the, is he still alive category?
Yeah.
So Bridget the Midget, I'd throw her right in there.
Yeah. Abe Vigoda, Bridget the Midget.
And Bob Barker. And
Bob Barker.
Mary fuck kill. Great to see you.
Good to see you too, man.
I just want to say this out of the gate, and then we'll just start, talking some shit. You're, one of the first I've been doing stand-up about 16 years now. You're what?
24.
Does it feel like 24?
No, but then when you think back on the memories, you're like, yeah, it's a whole lifetime ago.
Totally.
Some of these things.
Do you often do that? Like, I don't know if it's reminisce or just some sort of a club or even a city, stirs up an old memory from a gig where you're like, dude, that was already 15 years ago.
Well, this what's interesting, being out here like this time, which is nice, because I said I've been doing it for so long, and it took me a while to kind of crack. You know, the New York scene, I kind of got in.
Yeah.
And was sort of just like, stagnant's the wrong word, because it was getting better and working,
yeah.
But like I wasn't on the road really except opening for people, and I couldn't get that going. It just feels like such a short memory ago coming to Laugh Factory when I come out to LA, and or not Laugh Factory, it's Comedy Store,
yeah,
not knowing anybody and the ordeal, and then that fucking whacker that used to work at the door, or the manager used to
Tommy,
yeah.
Oh man, that, you got to see some Tommy,
gave
huh?
me that goddamn diatribe about Desi Arnaz or whatever owning the place one time. It was like he gives me the whole history of the building.
You're like, dude, I just want to see if I can.
Yeah, I'm like, can I put in my avails when I come to town? He's please. Like, well, next time we got to put you in the other rooms to see if you vibe with the place. All this shit.
Man, it was too high.
And it is nice when I said, when I went and, I did a show there last night. Mm-hmm. And when I went the other night just to kind of hang out, they're like, do you want to go on? And I'm like, that's great. That's a cool awesome. Thing to see, like, that flip.
Yeah.
Is interesting. And you're like, yeah, it's, but again, I'm thinking of a short memory. That was 10 years ago.
Wow.
That Tommy's thing probably was.
Wow. Yeah, the amount of political. Every club, no club or city is immune from it. I don't know if New York has a competitiveness the way that nobody cares in L.A. club-wise if you do the Factory Improv and then the store, right? There's none of that.
It's the opposite of that in New York.
Really?
And it sucks, yeah. It thins out the herd to only have one or two clubs having all the people. And they lay it on the comics. It's not even a subtle, well, I don't love that you play over there, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're like, no, if you're going to do there, we won't book you.
What
the fuck?
Like,
your people. It's, I know.
There's enough to go around.
Not only that, the ball bag to present that when you're on weekdays, it's $30, and on the weekends, it's $70, whatever it is, $100.
Yeah.
But you're like, what do you think? You're feeding my, there's no contract here.
No way, man. You.
They also do that to you, and the shittier thing is when they do it to comics who need the stage time.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I can see maybe being bummed, not doing anything, but man, Chappelle seems to go up at the Stand a lot more than the Cellar now.
Oh, wow.
When he's in town. I can see the Cellar being damn, what did we do? It's
yeah,
this isn't his place anymore. But for the young comics, they're not putting asses in seats anyway.
Yeah.
It's not the reason they're there. So who gives a shit?
Yeah. Have you, do you like it when you come out here? You're out here for your special, by the way. Dog
I do,
Belly.
Yeah, I'm doing promo for it. It's, yeah, I do like coming out here now.
Yeah,
for sure. I said that was a lot of the thing, was coming out here on trips alone, especially, and just based off of, I had to do one thing, I got a little thing to film or something.
Yeah.
Or some responsibility I had out here, and I was like, oh, I should see if I can get it. And it'd be one thing at the Laugh Factory.
Yeah.
And one thing at the Improv or something, a late night show. And yeah, just that awkwardness of you go there and hey, I'm Jay, is there a manager here?
Yeah. Dude, nobody is, I guess there is just maybe truly a handful of people that can walk in anywhere. I mean, I feel that way when I go to New York. It's but once you, guess what? Once you, I think we're also, every comic's got a little insecurity where you're
sure.
Oh, I don't want to assume, and I think that is the healthy approach, that I'm just going to walk in and I don't have to say anything to anybody, and they're just going to go, oh, Mr. Oakerson, right this way. We have your table set up.
I'm still so not that guy that I think within the last 2 or 3 years, just with a new person working or something at the comedy store, I've pulled my license out because ID, and I just go, yeah. It's so much better than being actually?
Oh.
I'm just my thing is just to go here, and then someone will come over and be dude, he's
yeah.
Okay. And I go, sure.
Yeah, great. You're doing your job. Totally. And there's also so many. You forget, too, there's young kids working at some of these clubs that, wanted to work at a comedy club but might not have a vast knowledge of the game yet.
That's what I'm saying. It's because comedy. It's not like I was on Night Court or something like that.
Well, not with that attitude. Do you watch Night Court?
The new one?
Yeah.
I can't because... And what's
what did John Larroquette do to you?
What's the called? What's it... too much exposition? Is that what that's called?
Yeah.
In that commercial for it, when it was when the girl, how is this story unfolding? And she's my father, the original star of this show, is,
Oh, God.
And it's they have another, sassy, black, bald lady.
Marsha Warfield. Yeah.
It was Roz. But now they have, it's not Roz anymore. It's because everyone, it's moved forward. He's supposed to be, John Larroquette's playing his character years older.
Wow.
And she is Harry Anderson's character's daughter, Judge Stone. That's
all
the
right thing
as a judge. And I was just...
I love that you even know that much.
They gave me all that in a 30-second trailer.
You're a
dentist. That's where I checked out when she goes, yeah. When she was like, my father, Harry Stone, told me that I'm going to be a judge. And that's the story.
Oh, God, yeah. They just set it up for you, but also closed the book for you.
Yeah.
No thanks.
And then he's still a public defender in Night Court after 40 years. Retire.
That's so funny. See, now that's if there's a character in there, maybe you're the bailiff, and you're the one looking up just going, dude, why are you still here?
Marky Post didn't even come back for this. And then Marky Post, let's throw her on that list of people. She sure might be dead.
She might be. Let's just start the list, by the way. Elliot, if you have a Sharpie and some...
Have not seen Marky Post.
Not in a while.
Since Night Court.
Are you a sitcom guy?
When I was younger, I was.
You were?
Yeah, well, I didn't get cable for a long time.
Oh, shit.
Until I was 16 almost. We didn't have cable. So it was TV channels. Yeah, so I watched, but it was a good time for it. It was like Cheers, Cosby Show.
A little bit of an influence.
Before Cosby Show, before the hullabaloo.
You always got to say the hullabaloo. You always got to say that. With R. Kelly, Cosby, and Michael Jackson, I feel like those are the kind of the trifecta of the, yeah, I was a big fan before the thing, right?
I think it's a fair question, but I think people have been shocked by my, everyone keeps asking now, they're like, Cosby on tour, would you go? And I'm like, yeah.
Totally.
I'd love to go. I go, I want to see what he's
would you pay for the ticket, though?
Sure. It is what it, he, because I
think it'd be terrible.
I don't think it's going to be good.
No.
I think he's out of it. He's not going to acknowledge this at all. I think everyone's waiting for him to acknowledge it. He's not even going to, I bet he's not even going to mention it.
You don't even think lights, one spotlight on him, people applaud, he just looks up and goes, oopsie. Or like, did I do that? Or like, I just some, steals a catchphrase from Jaleel. I don't know.
That
like
would
some,
be great, yeah. He goes, I got everybody in the audience an open soda.
I hope you can stay awake. It's going to be a long show. So some sort of call to.
The shot girl comes out. Hey, everybody. Like, feel free to have yourself.
Go ahead and have a. yeah. That that's a guy that still so many people can't shut the door on with their fandom for. And I didn't grow up on him. I acknowledge how phenomenal he was when yeah. he, I mean, probably storytelling wise. And you, and I know
and
you.
That show, that sitcom does hold up.
Oh, it was.
Of all sitcoms, like, it still comes on with, and I pop it on because I'll be like, oh, you never saw the episode. You know, my girlfriend's a little younger than me.
Yeah.
So I'll be like, she didn't grow up with the Cosby Show. So I'm like, oh, you never saw the, when Denise brings the guy home, or the, I mean, I remember those, and they're,
great.
And they still hold up, man. He was great.
Bro, I was a big Sesame Street guy, and Cosby came through a lot to the boulevard. He was mixing it up with everybody. Everybody liked him. Nobody, you know, Big Bird wasn't like, you know, what's that in your pocket? Like, it wasn't, everybody was, he just was a beloved guy. He was likable as shit.
Which really makes you feel so much more the thunder that it must ring with when you come to and realize America's dad is sliding it in you.
Yeah. Yeah. What? Yeah.
I thought that you wanted it.
I guess I can't read the room, Rudy. Are you? You're an incredible storyteller, and you know that. I don't know if that's how.
Thank
like,
you, man.
Yeah, man. Like, and that's what I want to get back to is you were one of the first, and it's cool to tell you this. Like, comics that I remember seeing when I started, that I was like, oof, all right. I don't know. Like, it was so intimidating but inspiring because
you
made it. You were having so much fun. You had such an ease and effortlessness to the way you connected a room, which is, and not only the crowd work material, you just brought everybody to you, like, right out of the gate. And
that was such influence from Patrice was a lot of that, Patrice O'Neill, because having him, I said, I mean, I'll say it ad nauseum till I'm dead, but to luck out with, like, two of my mentors, I had several mentors in different things. The first person who put me on stage in Philly, and I'll always remember him too, Ray Gordon, is like, helped me out in the beginning, just give me a little like lay of the land.
Yeah.
And then Keith Robinson grabbed me and Kevin Hart and Kurt Metzger and kind of brought us out of Philly up to New York, and he was kind of showed us the ropes of like, hang here, perform there.
Huge.
Get you what, yeah, huge.
By the way, me starting here, none of that.
Yeah.
Just hanging around. But also, everyone's on their own. Even Keith, you said it was Keith that brought you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Even him doing that, huge. He's still not opening doors for it's just giving pointing you in the right direction.
He's just going, hang here. And then also, because Keith was in that mix, was like, also, hey, these are my young guys. Meet Colin Quinn and Patrice and, you know, DePaulo and all those guys. I mean, the peripheral people at that point were like Burr and like Ben Bailey. You know what I mean? It was like,
yeah.
This weird like peripheral that of the guys that weren't even at that table yet. And to become friends with Patrice organically and kind of learn from him, that the two things to mention you mentioned with the storytelling, one was I was pure just like jokes when I first started.
Yeah.
And just like, and observational horseshit. Also, starting at 19, I had no life experience to draw from. So it was just dirty, just quick, like, you know.
Observational
And then, of course, so they couldn't do it. And like, and on top of that, being fat, you know, and like,
right.
All the fat jokes. When I started getting into the clubs in New York, One night I was at Caroline's, rest in peace. I was at Caroline's, and I was in the middle of the show somewhere, and Patrice had said to his manager, who was sitting next to him at the time, he said out loud, he's like, man, because Patrice at the time, and this is said a million years ago, so Patrice, a lot of his jokes were still like, I'm fat, fat guy, fat guy shit. And but he was great, you know. He was you already saw like what he was gonna become and could have become.
Fat Guy Shit, by the way, great album title.
Yeah, Fat Guy Shit.
I mean, I'm listening to both sides, then I get it.
So by the time that telephone back to me, because what he said to his manager was, Jesus Christ! By the time I go on stage, because I'm on these shows with him all the time to see these showcases, and I'm kind of going in the middle, he was saying like, Jesus Christ! By the time I get on stage, I have nothing to talk about because like. Jay's doing all this fat guy stuff. And by the time that telephone back to me, it came back as, Patrice said, you're stealing his material. And I looked up to him so much. And I was so that was such a soul-crushing thing. And I knew I didn't, but I was also like, well, I don't know what to say. I'm not going to go argue with him about it. Like, he's I know I didn't do it.
And you're a young comic, so you don't want to ruffle feathers.
So I cold-shouldered him for like 2 days.
Nice.
Not cold, I just didn't like, you know, I was like, hey, Patrice. And just kind of like went about my business, wouldn't talk to him.
Yeah.
Really, or sit down and engage.
Oh, man.
And then 2 days later, he called me, landline. I always remember that, my mom's house still I lived. And he was like, man, I didn't say that you, he's like, stop being a weirdo around me. I didn't say you stole my material. He kind of explained what he said.
Great.
And he was like that. And then I remember being funny. I was young enough too. He goes, but anyway, he goes, that's, I shouldn't even have said that. He was like, because the reality is the young guys are supposed to like kind of come in and motivate the older guys.
Yeah.
And he was like, I got much more to say than just a bunch of fat shit anyway. So he's like, don't worry about it. He was like, don't change anything you do for none of that shit. It was just me griping. And I was like, and as soon as he said it, I was like, well, I don't want to just do fat shit now.
Yeah.
He's explaining to me why it's like corny and like the easiest thing to do. And I was like, yeah, well, then I don't want to do it either. So then I started telling, you know, trying to write jokes away from that. And then it was DC Benny and Ben Bailey, two comics who started a show in the, I think, West Village at a place called Zinc Bar, and it was a storytelling show. And they came with that, like, you don't have to, doesn't have to be funny. Instinctually, I'm always going to do that, but for some reason, when you said that, always stuck out to me because I was like, oh, there's no pressure to, like if, because I still felt that, like, if they're not laughing, I'm bombing.
Yeah.
Not that they're listening or anything like that. I'm just like, they're not laughing, I'm eating shit. And that long-form storytelling was, like, I really liked it, and then I would go back to the comedy club that night and try to tell that story again. The problem with that was fledgling in those clubs all those years and just kind of being there, not fledgling, but just kind of, like, drifting through those New York clubs.
Yeah.
I was doing these stories, you know, they're long-form stories, so you kind of pick, like, two or three stories and tell them on the set, and then over and over, night after night, the same four walls. And then what I started doing was I saw a waitress at the comedy cellar with a comic on stage who didn't change his act very much, for lack of a better term.
Yeah,
that happens. Didn't change his act very much. And I saw when, like, you know, he got the light and he always goes into the same closing bit. And I saw a waitstaff girl walk out and mouth the words to one of the punchlines and, like, roll her eyes. And I was like, oh. That's what happens when they get, like, bored of hearing the same shit.
Oh, man.
So I got nervous in that, and that's when I started picking, like, a story to do and then just working the crowd the whole time. Because I'd be on After Dave Attell at 2 in the morning. They just saw the best comics in the world, and I was like, I'm just going to go and, like, fuck with the crowd. So that's when I kind of, like, and it's almost like what I do now. It's like a long-form thing and then just talk to the crowd for a while.
Wow, dude.
But I said I had mentorship that you couldn't. It's priceless what you could pay for. Learning, like, not even the business, because they weren't either of them business guys, but I mean, from Patrice, just kind of learning, like, the theory of it all and, like, the concept of, and just watching Attell, like, say, you know, all day long, like, his mind's just working and he's just, like, thinking of another bit and writing it down on this. And so it was such a cool thing. And that's just complete, like, chance. I just became, like, friendly with them.
The comedy staff opinion, like, I want to hit on that for a sec because that does matter. Like, and I love how much it affected you and ended up shaping the way you started to kind of approach who you are on stage, because You're right, man. It's all subjective, but like, you know, they at least know what they like and don't like. Yeah. And people that work at the club, you know, again, it's your span of the game. It's also, you got difference of opinions of all the people that work there, from someone that's in the bar, but the servers that are in and out, they're hearing everything, but they're also seeing the way people are. They're you know, if the show is weird or the person sucks or they're attacking, whatever it is, the vibe's off. The vibe's going to be off with their with their tab, the room. They just have, I think, a strong sense of...
They do, and Attell, another thing he passed, I always say I came from the Attell camp of, like, being on the road, like... I don't have a rider. I actually, it's funny, I don't have a rider at all ever, and I signed with new management about 6 months, 7 months ago, and it's great. I think out of the gates he wanted to do something, like just make a move, and so without even talking to me, it was sweet, but I talk about on the radio, like, I don't even know how many times I brought up, very minimally, but I drink my at-home drink when I'm like watching TV at night is Diet Peach Snapple or Peach Snapple Zero or whatever. At home exclusively.
Yeah.
I've never got a peach Snapple out on the road ever. It's like when I'm home watching TV. At night.
Yeah.
I'm not like a beer guy or anything. So
yeah.
That's my stupid drink in my Eagles cup. Is a thing. And
why won't you ask for one in a green room?
He must have heard that I've said that before. And I didn't even know. He must have thrown it on my rider to get Diet Peach Snapple. And I found out the first time I was in Orlando, the Improv. At the end of the Thursday night show. Well, the way I said it sounds like I'm complaining. I'm not. At the end of the show, I was in the green room afterwards, just sitting there. This poor kid comes in with, like, you know, a case. And he's like, hey, man, I'm so sorry that it's late after the show. But I go,
please don't tell me.
In fact, when he came barreling in, I thought coincidentally, I'm like, oh, they carry the IPs now. He goes, that's what I drink at home.
Yeah.
And he was like,
no connection.
And he came in, and he was like, sorry, it's late because, yeah, we didn't know it. And I go, late for what? He's like, your rider has the
for your consumption.
And I go,
I was told you need a case, man, before every show.
I was like, oh yeah, I don't need that at all. But I'm so sorry. And I'm like, I don't know what to do with it. And then I just, when I'd get on the phone with them, because it was funny, I would talk to my manager on like Fridays, is like our set talk time.
Yeah.
And I'm already on the road usually. And I just, 4 months until 2 weeks ago, I was able to say something about it. I keep forgetting. And then you start getting places. And I said, like, it goes back to being from the Dave Attell school.
Yeah.
Like the light footprint. Don't bother the staff. Tip good. Treat them right and everything because I'm like losing my train of thought because I'm a pothead.
Me too. This happens all the time.
Yeah, the fucking green room. Oh,
Peach Snapple. Yeah, the manager.
The rider. I was like,
Bridget the Midget.
I kept forgetting to tell him to take it off the rider.
Yeah.
And then you get the staff where my thing is always like pristine with the staff. And then I started hearing rumblings once in a while. They're like, not that they were being shitty, but just a thing where it's like, damn, I had to go to like five stores to find like that Diet Peach. I'm like, oh, dude. Like, and then you almost go back going like, I don't need that at all. I don't want it. And I'm like, I don't know what to tell. And so yeah. I finally got him. Like, I remembered on the phone one time. I'm like, oh, by the way, can you please take that off? Like, I feel like a jerk off.
God,
every city.
Time you go.
And like, we did it. We did it, everybody. We got the Snapple for you. We went through all those channels.
That's so fucking funny. What a specific drink, by the way, too.
Zero. I know it's like the one of all.
Oh, it's Snapple Zero?
Yeah, it's Snapple
Zero. So it's a flavor that I feel like isn't their most popular. I feel like they're leading with kiwi.
No, their biggest Snapple.
It is?
I think it's the peach iced tea.
Wow.
Or Snapple Apple. Either way, I've never thought about crushing one in a green room.
How do you feel about the Snapple facts?
They're gone. They don't do them anymore.
Shut the fuck up.
They don't tell you.
Why?
I don't know. I think Nantucket Nectar's probably still throws down a nice little fact.
Nantucket Nectar was like, abortions are legal in Washington State. You're yeah. like, I mean, hey, this...
A real lady covers her hair. Only her husband should see.
Suck on that, will you enjoy a watermelon? Lavender.
Just Amish facts. You gotta salt homemade butter. That's what makes it taste good.
Speaking of assault, there's four different states in the country where, yeah, it's a drink that didn't need the extra info. Snapple Cap Facts was a promotional move. It was almost like McDonald's Monopoly. And
the age of consent in Thailand is only 12. Oh, all right.
Enjoy your raspberry berry. Yeah, like,
okay.
Okay, yeah. This does, I, you know, this was...
Some asshole writing the facts, just horrible facts.
Well, that's the thing, too. Who gets that job? Is that like a fired late night worker, late night joke talk show worker, or is it just a young open mic comic that's just like, fuck it, dude, no one's going to see these.
Gary Glitter was railroaded.
OJ didn't do it. Thoughts?
I think Gary Glitter just got out, didn't he? They just announced that. I think they let him out of Vietnamese prison or something. Finally,
wow.
I mean, I say finally. He should probably be there forever.
Yeah. Have you been to jail?
A pedophile. I've been to like overnight stuff. Like never like any kind of like multiple days.
Gotcha. For what?
When I was younger, it would be like fighting stuff.
Yeah.
And they pick it. And then I think one time of those, my mom, you know, I was like, "Mom, they're saying you got to come get me from the thing," and she was like, "No, you're not. Like, go." And they, you know, it was like one night. Just going like to Camden, New Jersey overnight. And you're like, well, I don't want that to happen again.
Oh, my God.
And then I ended up getting out after a couple hours. But another arrest that was so funny was me and Kurt Metzger were driving. I was driving them home from my mom's house one day. And I got pulled over for some reason I don't remember. And when they came back, they go, "You have a warrant." And I was like, oh, shit. And I was like, for what? And it was there was a mom and pop video shop, which is a mom, just a pop. It was this guy owned a video shop called Wow Video. It was one location, you know.
Yep.
And when I turned 18, I would go in there because they had those, you know, the saloon doors of porn behind it.
There's a whole world waiting behind there. That's the Beyond from Bed Bath & Beyond.
And because it because it was
what if that's what it was at Bed Bath & Beyond? You push the door.
Smut. Pure smut. Down feather butt plugs or whatever. It's like always like something like that.
There is. They try to keep it somewhat consistent with what's in the main store.
Yeah. Cucumber pear anal lube?
Just two for one.
Those saloon doors. And because it was like a mom and pop shop, I just treated it like it was like, I think I rented stuff the first time.
Yeah.
Ever. And just like, was like, well, I just own these porn videos now.
Yeah.
Like I rented these four and they're mine now. I'll never return them, and I'll never rent from that place again.
Yeah.
Go to Blockbuster for movies. Go to Wow Video. They have one copy of Patch Adams.
And it's not Patch Adams.
Yeah. So, what I didn't know was, I think everybody had that ID in town, and this guy, who I'd met, and actually was like an all right guy, I met him like in that video store before, but he, kind of unbeknownst to me, very litigious. And what he would do is every couple of months, he would go and see who has like movies out or whatever, and just serve them, you know, with like a summons to appear to court. And I just didn't know that and didn't go. It glazed right past me. I'm like, why would I ever have to go to court? I'm like 19 or whatever. And I got arrested. Or that night they pulled me over and they go, "You have a warrant." And it was for, you know, unpaid porn movies, which is hilarious.
You still have not brought back Jurassic Cock?
I wish they had the names. That would have been so great. Because, by the way, they weren't. At that point, I was super into the Girls Gone Wild movies were, like, out.
You could rent those.
But not even, you could rent them, but they were more even just the order on TV.
Gotcha.
But, and I've looked into this as an adult a little bit. Those Girls Gone Wild things, they have a lot of original footage, but a lot of them are they're just purchasing footage from these videos. They were just a white cover box with a printed out like printer paper picture.
Yeah.
And it would just be like Lake Havasu spring break 1997.
What the fuck?
And it was like Girls Gone Wild.
Uncensored.
But much. Yeah. So it wasn't just like, and you can't even find them online, these things anymore. Cause it was, there's a few scenes I found online. I'm like, I remember that from that video. But it was like legitimately like Mardi Gras and like some guy like laughing and a girl's like, "I'll suck his," like it's real. They were like real things.
Wow.
And I loved those.
Wow.
So I had a
just caught on cam, like Cloverfield type found footage.
It's how I know about something. Somebody was saying when we were going to Key West, I'm like, "Is Fantasy Fest happening?" And they're like, "What's that?" I go, "It looks like the oldest, grossest swingers orgy in the country." Because Fantasy Fest is like Key West old people just letting it loose. Just dicks out and
old
flappy
nude beaches,
just sun cooked tits. Not even just through the streets of Key West during this time. It's like the carnival or whatever. But so the guy goes, "You have this warrant. We got to take you in." And I was like, "Oh shit!" Like, okay. I'm like, "Well, can like my friend Kurt and his girlfriend was Jessica at the time," and he goes, "I was like, can they take my car at least like back to my place or whatever?" He's like, "Yeah, it's fine." And then they go, They asked Kurt also for his ID. Kurt, you hear come, now I'm in the car, so I start hearing come through the radio. They go, wait, they grab the guy, the Metzger, grab him because he's got a jumping the turnstile in the subway as a Philly ticket.
Holy shit.
Grab him. So then they cuff Kurt, and that's when I was like, hey, can like his girlfriend, like Jessica, can she please like take the car though? Like, don't impound my car. And they go, yeah, man, no worries. Like, she could take it. They're almost calming me down. And then me and Kurt are sitting in the back. It's one car only. So me and him are both sitting in the back of the car. And then we hear on the thing, they go, wait, don't let her go. She's got a warrant for, was that some other thing she had a warrant for? We all three got arrested.
Oh, my.
And they did impound my car.
Oh, my God. This is Philly.
Yeah, we're outside. That was South Jersey, actually.
South Jersey. Like, you moved there from Philly.
Yeah, yeah. My longest time in a thing was like 20 hours, and that was in New York. That was another one. Pulled over for I had a suspended license for an unpaid seatbelt ticket.
Yeah.
And the beauty of being so illegal, though, and like driving without a license for so many years or suspended and all that, like dicking around and having pure fear of the cops and them also being dicks, is now that I am like, it's a different world. Being completely legal, I know if a cop pulls me over, there's nothing to do that I'm doing wrong.
Yeah.
So that is, now I finally understand being white, where you get to go, what the fuck is your problem, officer?
Yeah.
Because they really can't do much about it if they're like being dicks. Like, you can be shitty back to a cop. They really just can't arrest you for just being a dick.
The amount of, you ever see those videos where people are getting arrested, but they're like outsmarting, they just know more than the cop about their own job. They're like, dude, you can't do this. You can't even put your hand inside my window. You can't even, stop selecting. I don't want to listen to the Bare Naked Ladies. Get your hand off my fucking CD player. Like, they're just saying everything you can't do. And the cop's like, kind of frozen, but also just like, hey, dude, I need you to stop talking. I need you, like, just trying to use verbal force.
Well, dude, anytime I've had like problems with the police, it's so, because I desperately try to like respect the job,
yeah,
and the danger that it's supposed to be.
Sure.
But I mean, every time I've ever been like handcuffed, I'm always like, shit, okay, all right, so there's no way to like get out of this? Like, no, we gotta take you in. I'm okay. And you know, put your hands behind your back, and they still like head down on the car.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
And like, you know, waiting to, like,
oh yeah,
it's like, pull your arms back, put your other arm. And they're like, yelling, you're like, guys, I just was like, yeah, I got it. And you know, it's like a seatbelt ticket. Yeah. Like, calm down.
Oh yeah.
And
I don't think the hiring process is as swift as it can be.
Yeah, I lived in New York for a while in the East Village. I lived on a police station block, which I thought was going to be a benefit, and it was
the opposite.
Just the worst. The abuse of the power is gross. I've seen that, and just like their just disregard for like it's awful the way they just talk to people and stuff.
There's an argument to be made that the cops in Grand Theft Auto do a better job.
Yeah,
at patrolling the streets.
Although if they can't find you for, I think, 45 combined seconds, the entire town gives up. They don't even have they don't have an APB anymore. Everyone's like, I don't know, I think he like went into the grass.
He's
in the tall grass.
Okay, so you, a lot to talk about here. You grew up in Philly. Mm-hmm. So is that kind of contribute to the, I'm sure people look at you with tats and facial hair and piercings and go, oh, yeah, of course you got arrested in Philly growing up. But also, and what's great about in getting to know you, and the first time we really kicked it was when we went to watch Sal and the Jokers at Conan. And I got to be so taken aback with like, oh, dude, you're such like a sweet teddy bear of a human. And when you smile, you like light up a room, and you're such a nice dude.
Oh, thank you.
But when you just watch someone from afar and you see, you know, the way they mix it up with the crowd. And it's even with your crowd work, you're never demonstrative. You're never trying to like bury someone and make them go home and feel whatever.
No, but I always think the more fun is always, like you said,
that also stuck out to me.
You pick on like the jacked dude who's like great looking and you try to pump the nerd up and get him laid.
Yes.
That's always the more fun of it.
Kill him with kindness, right? And you still got to hit him and hug him, but.
But it is also like the way I used to describe it, the term I use, like my comedy, I hope at least, has dimples in the sense where it's like.
Nice.
If you're saying the hardest thing, you're still almost kind of going like, but come on. It's like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. That's why I always hate when they're looking for like reason in jokes. They're like, what do you mean when you said this about whatever Malaysian people? I'm like, nothing. Like,
it's a joke.
It means nothing.
Sounded funny.
I don't know any Malaysian people. I just made a very racist guess. We're all supposed to laugh at how ridiculous that racist guess is.
Yeah.
Philly's funny. I know it is funny. All the things that probably look the part of like, don't fuck with this guy.
Yeah.
Are the reasons behind them are even so hilariously not like, earrings are the only piercings I really have, and my nose, I guess. Both of those are just things I wanted since I was a kid. And we found this on a Sirius XM show recently, a bonfire that we do.
Your bonfire show with Dan Soder, yeah.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
We found these things. When I was younger, I used to just draw rock stars, and very important, the hoop earrings and the long hair. You know what I mean? Like, it meant so much to me, and the nose rings. And I always drew that on stuff. So I wanted those things very bad. And again, for, you know, I was like insecure, so I'm like, well, this makes us like cool stuff, sort of, you know?
Yeah.
And then the tattoos, like, same thing. It was like, well, this is like, I'm kind of a fat, doofy kid, so I'm like, I'll get tattoos, and then maybe it looks like tougher or cooler. So
yeah.
There's really no, it was
wow.
Not, it wasn't even like, you know, it's like, yeah, put that tribal right there to show off my fucking, my cuts. I was almost like, well, my arms are fat, and now there'll be a big picture.
The slattest fat. Were your role models Bebop and Rocksteady? Like, they both have piercings and tats, and they fuck a lot.
Man, Kurt Metzger said at a roast years ago about me. He said Jay dresses like he it looks like he rhino charged through a Hot Topic and just left on whatever he came out with. I was like, that'll work. But it's also in like the full disclosure of the thing. That's why I also don't mind like critiquing people, because I'm not ridiculous, you know, because everyone's like Jay with a wallet chain or whatever the things are. The jewelry and stuff, and I'm like, yeah. I wish I had the balls when I was a kid to dress how I wanted to dress. I went with the format. I dressed hip hop, very wiggery, and my personality never changed to it, but I did that because it was just like of the times.
Totally.
Like, everyone wears like hip hop stuff, but it's so like, I almost have the shirt. Someone made one for me once, and it just was a weird fit. But I was like, when I was a kid, I always loved. Not even like muscular, like other like teenagers, or whatever. It was like the skinniest, skateboardy, and like it was the shirt. Everyone knows the Led Zeppelin.
Oh, yeah.
With the angel.
Yes.
Like that. It's always 3/4 length sleeve. Yeah. And I was just like, my whole life, I was like, that's the shirt. Like that. I pictured looking cool in that shirt my whole life is what I wanted to.
Wow.
To kind of be, but I just went with the thing, and which led to so many, you know, pleated jeans and. MC Hammer pants and all these things that other people were pulling off that I was just like, no, I could rock this. Like, for sure, because everyone's doing it. So now as an adult where I was like, no, now I can just kind of dress however I've always wanted to dress.
So
it's funny when they're like, what are you, Jay, are you a singer from a new metal band in the 90s? I'm like, I wish, right? No, I just dress like it.
Were you a funny kid?
Yeah.
You were like the guy that, I'm always curious with comics. Like,
never class clown, though.
Right.
It was more like...
In small groups, subtly, or were you kind of the man of the...
No, small groups for sure, amongst a group of friends, but also, like, I wasn't like... Again, I don't like... It's why I love Impractical Jokers so much, why I say it. Jackass and Impractical Jokers are, aside from loving the guys, but, like, it's unjudgeable comedy as a comedian.
Yeah.
I can't do that better. In fact, my personality is not even good at doing that. I'd be like a Q more. Like every time they're like some version of like, hey, call this girl old, like in some way. You know what I mean? Like ask her why she's here with her son when it's clearly her boyfriend or something.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, nah. Like, no way I'm saying that. Now in a comedy club, I would do that exact thing because I'm like, I feel like there's like a contract.
Mm.
When you walked into a comedy club, you're being fucked with. The cold fucking with people on the street is not my deal at all. So I do like... Love, that's what the Joker's like caught me so much. I get to just sit back and watch it.
Were you with your family? You got brothers and sisters?
Yeah, they're my brothers and sisters, yes. But my mom remarried when I was 10.
Mine too.
And
split when I was 10. Remarried about an hour ago. But yeah, split at 10 or when they split?
They split when I was 3.
Oh, wow.
And then my step-pop came in when I was 10, and then they have my brother and 2 sisters. After that, and then my dad's got 2 kids in Ohio. I don't know them quite as well.
Yeah, that happens.
But it is. What's hilarious is my siblings, like my close siblings, my brother and sisters, look, they're all my stepfather, like Italian, all pretty short and tiny. My mom's kind of short and tiny. And my brothers in Ohio, who I don't know if I know both their middle names, look identical. Like, we all look alike. That's
holy
like all the
shit.
Same thing. It's very weird when you see them.
Do they claim you? Are they like, like, you know, oh, dude, our brother, he's got his own radio show specials.
The funniest thing when they come and they say things, they're like, They're like, yeah, you know, the old man, something like, he never shuts up about you. It's like always telling everybody that my son, the comedian, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah. But he does know and acknowledge your birthday your whole life. I'm like, so.
Hey, man, yeah. Yeah. Which one do you want? I guess can't be choosers.
Oh, we always say it's so funny. They always bring up on the radio show, it's just some picture of like that, my dad and the two boys, and they're all wearing like adult onesie pajamas.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's like, we give the old man a hard time, but Big G, you're the best dad anyone could ask for, something like that. I'm like, man, we have very different experiences.
That's awesome.
But yeah. My brother and sisters, I was like a big part of like taking care of them growing up. We were broke, and like my parents, my step-pop and mom, both went back to college when they were both in their late 20s.
Wow.
And kept farting out kids, so I was in-house like baby. We were broke, so I took care of them while they worked a bunch.
Holy shit.
And that's when we were able to move to South Jersey. That's the move. Everyone goes from Philly to South Jersey, and then the kids become pieces of shit because there's no parents at home. Nice neighborhood, nicer houses, no parents home, kids running wild. Philly, which is urban, West Philadelphia, dangerous, yeah. You know, all those things. And for some reason, I just never, it was such a crazier teenage time that 1 year in South Jersey High School, because first time I've ever heard of, like, I've heard of heroin, but I didn't know people, like, kids were doing heroin. Like, several kids died in the
what?
The senior year of in South Jersey of heroin.
There were signs that they were abusing.
Like, where do you get heroin? Where do you guys get heroin? The 70s? That's the last time I
heard. Just walk into a 7-Eleven. Yeah, give me some jujubes and yeah. Just a couple needles.
Hey, is David Crosby your step? Where are you getting heroin from?
How do you ask for that? What does it even feel like to, I guess, grow up quick like that when you have to raise your siblings and you're kind of... This was at what age for you?
So funny. I started at 11 watching my brother. And then every 4 years... for the next 8 years, she had like another kid, and so once one was like not a baby, and you can like watch them, but almost like do your own thing.
Yeah,
I'm gonna play video games.
Yeah,
like there'd be another baby, like that quick. It was good. It probably kept me out of a ton of trouble. And they are also my parents were cool. I didn't have like the, which I always think it's weird anyway, but I didn't have the everyone come over and you could smoke and drink in my house. My parents.
Glad I didn't have that.
I didn't have that, but with.
That guy's working at Costco right now.
Yeah. But I also
which is fine.
But I also didn't have... my friends really weren't like that in some way. Even though some of them smoked pot and drank and stuff, I'm sure. When they came to my house, it was never something to worry about. So my parents, because of that, my friends being all pretty good people, they kind of gave me run. Like, I know you're here 16 hours a day.
Yeah.
On Friday and Saturday, your only days off of school watching it. So have over whoever you want and, like, you know, here, order pizza and shit. So that was kind of cool.
That's dope.
They gave me that. But... it's not so much growing up fast, because when I hear, if with my daughter's 20 now, I'd be mad all over again if somebody from her childhood like would tell the stories of how they watched her the way I watched my brother and sister. And they remind me, which is the funniest, like, my sister was like, remember you used to lock, my brother's name's Bobby, remember you used to lock Bobby in the closet with all your friends until he would say the N-word?
What the fuck?
And I was like, oh, yeah, that was funny. And by the way, it's different than it was now. I feel like now everything is so divided.
Sure.
Much more ever than then, because I was like, everyone's like, what are you, like, all your white friends just use the N-word? I go, no one really my black friends were there, and we just thought it was hilarious to hear a two-year-old say the N-word.
Totally.
I go, no one was overthinking.
No.
Like, they knew me, so nobody thought that was a thing.
Everybody was on board.
It was just not a thing at all to worry about that. And, like, my sister, they were also, again, they're so tiny.
Yeah.
And I was, like, a big kid, too. So it was like, remember you would hang us over the, you know, the banister by our ankles? And I'm like, I do. Like, now that you're saying it, I do. But I'm not happy about it. That was not good babysitting at all.
Oh, my God.
And my stepfather and mom, they're great, because they're just like, we had to work, and they lived. Everyone's alive.
They lived.
Yeah.
I mean, they come home, and it's like, that's all you're really responsible for, is like make sure they don't die.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything that happens in between, not going to ask a lot of questions.
Me and my ex have been split since my daughter was 12. But it was funny. When she turned 18, though, we did have that thing where it's like, hey, if she dies now, it actually is her responsibility. 1,000%. If she kills herself now, it's choices she's
on
making.
Her.
We didn't do shit. Like, yeah, we're fine.
We got her this far. Man, how has that been raising a kid at all? I mean, just what has it done to you? What has it done to your comedy?
It's such an interesting thing because it really, when I started, and maybe it didn't have to be, I don't know, but like when I first started, 19, she was born when I was 23. I just turned 23.
So you're 4 years into comedy.
Yeah, and just like not anywhere and trying to get into places.
Yeah.
I just moved to New York. Me and my girlfriend moved to 9/11 happened, and the trip to New York every day that we were doing 6 days a week went from an hour and a half, 2 hours up and an hour and a half home to potentially 4 hours at least to go up and three some hours to get home because they just changed. It was like one way into the city, damn, one lane. So it kind of hastily moved up, and I didn't have a lot of money, and my ex-wife had some loan money left from college that she was going to law school, actually.
Yeah.
And she had a couple bucks left so we can get the deposit. Me, Metzger, his girlfriend, and my girlfriend moved in together in Astoria, Queens. And 2 months later, she was like, I'm pregnant. I was like, well, what do you want to do? I'm like, well, you know, I'll go with you. I'm like, I don't want to say, like, let's get rid of it. And then you go, but I really wanted to. And then I go, well, then if we do, I'm going to look at her every day. Oh, like, God. I was absolutely down to kill you. I was ready to walk away. So I just put it all. I was like, I'll support whatever
good
you want to
move.
Do. And then she was like, yeah, fuck it. Let's do it. And I was like, let's do it. And
terrified.
I said to my daughter before, terrified for sure. Well, I got a real reality dose because I had such like a, I've been taking care of my brother and sisters.
Oh, yeah.
Since I was a kid. I go, this is cake. And then realized quickly, I'm like, you know what? Even those 16-hour days of babysitting, there is a point where I go, here's your children back, and now I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
I was like, it wasn't like that at all. So I wasn't prepared. And I say, this to my daughter so many times, it's fine that it did, especially because like eventually I got like on a track that I'm happy with. I like what I get to do. But it stifled my career, like stunted my career a lot.
Mm.
Because I couldn't. When all my friends or people that were starting around my time,
yeah,
or a little after me even, were like, so, you know, pilot season, I'm going to go couch surf out in L.A. for like a month, and I have a friend's going to let me stay with them, and I'm just going to do auditions and whatever. That's why it took me so long to get into like the clubs.
Yeah.
I was in my like 30s,
yeah,
by the time I was like asking to get into the Comedy Store, because it wasn't like I could just do that. I was like, no, I have to like keep doing like black circuit shows, or like, I have to make tangible money. Or I'm going to have to go back to school or work or something,
right,
you know? So it did definitely. But the accumulation of, like, experiences having a daughter have been amazing. Also, I mean, she's the best.
Yeah.
She rules. And especially now when she's 20, it's the cool, you know?
I was just going to say, yeah.
Go to concerts and,
that's,
you know.
Awesome.
We take her to, like, she's a big Sixers. I made her a Sixers fan, and she is legitimately a Sixers fan. So we go to games.
Amazing.
And shit. Yeah.
That, yeah, you can't put a price or any sort of
but
those
so
experiences.
When she was 12, it's kind of like the wall I run into with her mom sometimes too. Circumstantially, maybe, by just chance, maybe, but the second I left, when me and her mom broke up and I moved out, and which did give me no less, in fact, significantly more financial responsibility,
yeah,
to them, but not as much like physically their responsibility.
Yeah.
And, immediate change in career. It's so funny. Like, but again, it could be just circumstance. We got the radio show, me and Dan.
Yeah.
I got Oddball Tour, like,
yeah,
the 1 year, and that was a beginning. And just like these, Schumer put me on her
sketch show.
The sketch show.
Yeah.
Louis put me in that. Jim Jefferies let me open for him at Carnegie Hall. Ari,
wow,
Shaffir put me on that storytelling show. And it was just all kind of in like a year or two, just people coming up and being like, what are you? Because I was so out of, you know, I was like, they're like, hey, why don't you have sets on YouTube? And I'm like, what's the process of that? I'm
sure.
Like, I don't know what the. How, wow, do we get these VHS tapes? You have VHS tapes?
I know some guys at Wow Video. They'd love to sponsor my next special. You guys down to fuck with them?
Wow Video. I do think after I settled up with that guy, you know, I didn't want to have a bad thing with him, so like, when I paid it, even though all the shit I went through, the fact that he was still willing to be like, hey, lesson learned, right, kiddo? That I was able to be like, yeah, I'm going to go get some more porn, and did it all over again. But it place shut down before I ever had to, like, 1,000%. It just went under out of business.
Did you ever have
probably because I took Lake Havasu Tits and Ass Volume 7.
Volume 7 was the better one. It took them a while to find their voice.
Yeah. It seven. Wasn't as good as the book, a lot of people say.
Did you have any places in Philly or Jersey growing up that were like, we in Seattle, we had a place called Tubbs that I thought was a sandwich place because we had Tubbs subs, but turns out it was a place where you could rent hot tubs, bring in a stranger of the night or someone from your past or present and just bangarang hook style in that hot tub and do whatever you wanted. For...
Did they drain the hot tubs every time or is it just cum soup?
No clue. That was next door. And that was a pho place. But it was... I didn't know what it was, and my buddy's dad, we're driving back from a soccer game, we drove by it, and I was like, we should stop and get some tubs, and he goes, oh, you don't want to go in there, and I go, why, what goes on there, and he basically broke down what I just said, he's like, well, you got hot tubs, right? I was like, that sounds awesome, he goes, and you can rent them out, I go, you're two for two in explaining
goes, why
how...
Why are we not already in the parking lot of this
yeah,
place?
Yeah, yeah, and then he's like, you go and you pay, and you bring somebody, and you can do stuff with each other, and I'm like Uno, or fucking Hacky Sack, you know, this is 1994.
Maybe have a mimosa while you hang out.
Yeah.
Get a schwitz.
Yeah, and then he broke down, you know, all the banging that was going on, but did you have any of those, like, that was, I guess, a brothel, more or less, but it was not a strip club, but it was filthy, but it made me go, like, wow, at 10 years old... It was my first, like,
wow, yeah.
The world is crazy.
All of my like paying for like those weird kind of experiences things are short lived. And again, so, it's funny to find how much of my life is fueled by like insecurity. I know friends of mine, like good looking guys, some of the more in shape guys, don't really, not all of them do, but all of them do not have like a real qualm. They go, I haven't gotten laid in so long. I'm just thinking about getting like a prostitute or something. And I'm like, the more confident people I know say something like that. The reason I don't, which I said, I've not done these things at all, but I always leave that going like, I'm one of the things she's crying about in that scalding hot shower she's taking right now. You know what I mean? I'm like, and then that fat shithead came in and sweat all over my fucking back or whatever. Is what I just assume is happening.
Yeah.
And so I just didn't, but when I was younger, those Asian places were like, I would have probably had a problem if I had more money, like going, because I couldn't believe it. I'm like, these stunning girls. Now, as you get older, you're like, oh, I think I was part of a chain of sex slavery, but yeah. I didn't mean to be. I was just trying to be fat and cum. I had no idea that girl.
Oh, yeah. Man, and there's a...
When we heard that, we went more times than my friend Glenn in Philly. I remember one time.
It's always Glenn.
Saying he asked... He asked her to take her away from all this, and she just kind of like, why? He's like, let me get you away from all this. It's so funny because it seems like a thing. They bring out the girls like in a line, like pick, basically.
Like the bunny ranch.
Yeah. And then, though, like a door gets kicked open, and you see like eight more girls on like four mattresses eating like something out of a bowl with chopsticks. You're like, is that, like, what's going on there?
Is that on the menu?
Yeah, is that ninja training? Because it's a... It was creepy, but I couldn't believe the process of that.
Brad told me he went to the Bunny Ranch once. The guy who, I think his name is Dennis?
Yeah.
Started the Bunny Ranch. They had that HBO show for a little bit that gave you a curtain peel reveal of what was truly happening between the sheets and the walls. And Brad went through, and I was like, yikes, dude. I go, you don't have to tell me, but, I mean, were they all just like, he's like, yeah, dude, I was a fucking hot commodity. Like, I fucking, you know, walked in there crap, whatever, you know, did a Willy Wonka tumble and presented himself. And no, he didn't. But anytime I see Brad, I just go, you're missed opportunity to not fucking do some sort of a tumble and into a jazz.
And when he was done, he opened up a giant umbrella and floated away with the wind.
Goodbye, everybody. Oh, my God. Brad, if you're listening, the end of your next special has got to be some sort of up Mary Poppins combo.
You leave
move.
With just let a gust take you. Where do we land? Wherever we land. We are the dreamers of dreams.
You somehow get some like deep fake of like Jeff Richards, Willy Wonka on like a projector saying that as Brad floats away. Or you just played the Wizard of Oz end credits. I don't know. There's a myriad of options. Hey guys, Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast. Well, it's another new year. We made it, 2023. We did it. Congratulations. Hug yourself. Touch yourself. So that when you ask yourself who touched you, you know who it was. You got goals, guys, okay? And you want to achieve all of them, every single one of them. And Factor is here to help you do that. So if you're looking to fuel up fast with ready-to-eat nutritionists,
nutritious meals. Yikes. You ever just forget how to read? Meals delivered straight to your door. Then Factor's the place to go, okay? They leave you time and energy to tackle everything else on your to-do list, so you don't have to worry about where and what you're eating. Achieve and maintain your 2023 goals with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal kit, and start saving time, eating well, and living your best life yet. If you love Factor, probably because you're too busy to cook and you don't like going to the grocery store and potentially, you know, running into somebody from your past, and you want to skip the chopping, prepping, and cleaning up too. Well, Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are ready in just 2 minutes, and all you need is heat and a positive attitude. So whether your lifestyle is keto, calorie smart, vegan, protein plus options are on the menu each week. They're prepared by chefs and approved dietitians, not these unapproved dietitians. And each meal has all the ingredients that you need to feel satisfied all day long. 34 chef-prepared, dietitian-approved weekly options are there for you. Plus, you can round out your meal and replenish your snack supply with an assortment of 36-plus sweets, smoothies, juices, and more satisfying add-ons. Cut back on takeout and get Factor instead. Okay, it's ready to make, ready to eat food in just 2 minutes. Eating vegan or veggie is a snap with Factor. Each meal is prepared by the chefs that know what you want, and they're excited to give it to you. So head to factormeals.com/lastnight50 and use promo code lastnight50 to get 50% off your first box. That's insane. I didn't know that was the deal until I just read it. That's crazy. 50% off at factormeals.com/lastnight50, and you're going to get 50% off your first box. That's insane, so you got to do it. There's no better deal out there, and no better food as well. Factor.com/aboutlastnight. Oh, wait, /lastnight50. Okay, do that. Hey guys, Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast. Hope you're enjoying the episode, and it's cookie time. Attention, all cookie lovers, including me. Love cookies. Cookies are my weakness. I've said it before, and I'm saying it again right now. I know you crave the sweet taste of freshly baked cookies. Just saying that makes me foam at the mouth. Say it again with me. Freshly baked cookies dipped in milk or eaten by themselves. Well, look, my friends at Twin Life Baking Company have you covered in cookies. With cookies, you can cover yourself in cookies. It's your life. Made from the finest ingredients and baked to perfection. They've got flavors like red velvet stuffed Nutella, vanilla cookie monster, rocky road, s'more, strawberry short stack, birthday, funfetti, chocolate bomb, snickerdoodle, pumpkin snickerdoodle, classic chocolate chip, cinnamon toast crunch, cowboy cookie, cookies and cream, lemon delights, and guess what? My very own cookie. That's right, the Adam Ray Pop-Tart. Little bits of brown sugar Pop-Tart on a cinnamon Snicker. It's a chocolate. Just trust me, all right? It's the greatest cookie I've ever had. I get emotional thinking about it. If you're listening to this, you're probably a person with great taste buds and you love great cookies and you want to celebrate two badass moms. So right now, go to twinlifebakingcompany.com and use promo code AboutLastNight to save 20% off your order. That's twinlifebakingcompany.com, promo code AboutLastNight to save 20% off your order. What time is it? Cookie time. Now let's get back to the episode. So when you you moved your senior year, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Was that fuck, dude? I feel like all this stuff, you know, when people ask a comedian, like, you know, was it your divorce? Was it the teasing? You know, what kind of made you a funny or gave you this?
Well, switching schools was a good like thing for that. But I remember switching that year. Because I didn't want to switch schools, and I was commuting back to Philly for school for a couple months, and I was just like, this, it's just, I have to switch schools. It's just too ridiculous to not go 5 minutes from my house.
Yes.
To drive an hour and 15 minutes to go to it looks like a prison, the school I went to in Philly, but it was what it was. So I went over to this new school and made some friends, and it was always through being funny, but that moment of being like 16 or 17 and going like, new city though, I should really take... This should be like the reinvention. Like, I'm set in stone. My school in Philly was kindergarten through 12th grade. So I was with people since first, you know, long-term friends since first grade, kindergarten.
That's crazy.
You know, and I'm leaving in 11th grade. So I was like, but I went, I was like, you know what, though? I'll take the positive of this. Like, it's time to reinvent myself and really be.
You're going with a clean slate.
Yeah, it's like I could really try to. And all I remember was going myself to a pool hall that was like all ages, to mostly teenagers, and playing pool alone, thinking that my like, the flag I was like flying was like, come talk to me. I was dressed, it must look so, if I was now sitting looking at that from across a pool hall, I was wearing a gray a gray t-shirt. T-shirt. Oh. But the sleeves, Brandon Walshed, you know, 90210. Like,
dude, that's all you got to say, Brandon Walshed.
And on top of that, Joey Lawrence-esque, the vest with the black back and maybe some plaid on the front and jeans. And I just remember just walking around, like, chalking a stick. Oh, whoa, completely by myself, drinking, like, a Diet Coke or whatever.
Seeing a girl at the bar and going, whoa. This guy loves Blossom, or is he related to Lawrence?
I'm like, what did I think I was putting out there? He goes, time to go let everyone see what's going on over here at the pool hall. Mom, if you need me, I'll be being 90210 out there.
Holy shit, trying to do a...
I looked probably so ridiculous, but I felt like Brian Austin Green. I felt like Bag. I went out with Bag energy.
Anytime... Yeah, dude, I think... And look, if you're not picking up what Jay's putting down, Brian Austin Green had a run of being the guy.
Yeah.
Not only on 90210, I would assume many team beat covers.
Oh, yeah, just in life. He just had that... He had that role for sure, and then got Megan Fox.
And got Megan Fox from it. Yeah, that's easier said than done, dude. To go to have 11 years with all, and then 1 year. How do you grab onto?
Also, navigating what was crazy was my school in Philly was like predominantly black, and that didn't register. I knew it was, but it didn't really register as that's not, you know, it was like, so again, we were there forever.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like, even though it wasn't like segregated, though. It wasn't just like the white kids were friends at white kids. No one even thought about it. To then go to a school in South Jersey where there was 3% black kids.
Wow.
And I did end up becoming friends with like those, because it was such a weird, what I thought was weird was, as a new person, how outwardly like racial stuff they would say, which, by the way, if it was joking, I'm not even above that or laughing at it with a group of goofy white guys. It felt like it was like they were saying it like, we can do this kind of loud because no one's going to care. And I'm like, oh, no, guys, we're supposed to whisper this and laugh back at white HQ. Don't do this, Al. You're going to make them upset. It was like so blatant, you know what I mean? Like,
that's bonkers.
Ah, dude. Justin, you black motherfucker. And you go, hey.
Easy, Daniel.
Whoa, yeah. Hello, confident.
Oh, man. Did you like school?
Once I kind of found like my little kind of like, not click, but I just knew how to kind of navigate the day with friends and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't hate, it certainly wasn't the best years of anything. I was no rush to go to college.
You always strike me as someone that's been like as, I guess, personable, affable as you are. Bonfire with Dan Soder that you guys do on, it's Comedy Central's serious show is so fucking good. You guys have an amazing rapport.
Yeah, he's great. It's just to have someone like that to play off of.
Built-in friendship of how long before that?
Maybe 5 years, but it was funny.
The show kind of brought it.
The show, yeah, definitely brought up a notch, but it was just me and Dan, my girlfriend Christine, whenever she would see me and Dan. We had each other's numbers, but we weren't like text friends at all, but we saw each other at comedy clubs a lot. And when we would, Dan was still smoking, so we'd both be outside. And it was just an unspoken, like, there's a few people you walk up to, and he would walk up doing, like, you know, I'm like, is that Dan Soder? You know, whatever dumb thing. Yeah. And then he'd do a sassy voice. Yeah, and it's like, it's stupid. But at the same time, you're just like, that's like a weird, like, kind of simpatico thing.
Totally. You gravitate towards it.
My girlfriend was like, you guys should try doing some sort of a show. So he's like, recorded a bunch of stuff and gave it to SiriusXM. And yeah, it's been
Have there been guests or shows that really stick out as far as, like, you know, I guess also looking for in this, you know, career where you've you know, so many great specials and the storytelling show with Ari, and now your special coming out, the Dog Belly, April 5th on YouTube, produced by Ari.
Yeah
Amazing.
Yeah, Ari, really, I mean, talk about someone who's going to be in the thank you of my life story, Ari Shaffir, because he knew a little more. Not that he's great at the business of comedy necessarily, but he knew more of it. He just had like some things working that I didn't have working. So my agent was him putting his agent on to me and being like, wow, you should look at this guy. And then, you know, he overly cares. He fought for me to be on that show. Comedy Central had no interest in having me on that storytelling show. They told me that. And he like fought for me to be on it. And then they, you know, a couple years after that, I got my Comedy Central hour.
Which yeah, I was going to say, your Ari story and your appearance was like, it popped. So that
he gave me like, yeah, I mean, so it really, he put me back on that. And then even with this special, I was just like, yeah, I don't know, like Netflix and these things are like, they're just dicking around and saying like, you know, let's look in a year and shit. Where I'm like, I'm sitting on this stuff all through COVID.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get rid of it. And Ari was just like, let's just self-produce. And he just basically took everybody who did the Jew special he just did, which is great. And just like, he was like, and he had me hire all of them to come do this.
It awesome.
Great. Yeah. I mean,
where'd like, you shoot it?
At Skank, our festival, Skank Fest down in Vegas. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A very hilariously casual way to say our festival. You and Louis J. It's just you guys.
And Dave Smith.
And Dave Smith, yeah.
That's the Legion of Skanks. But the festival itself, actually, even though it's kind of based off of the name of Legion of Skanks,
yeah.
It's our, we're the figureheads of it.
Yeah.
It's Louis's idea, and then Christine and Rebecca Trent. And are just he picked the right people. And those girls just fucking. I mean, it all unfolds in my apartment for months, so it's a nightmare in that regard. But it's
It's in its like fourth.
It's like we'll be doing our sixth. Wow. I think now sixth or seventh.
And the amount of on this last one, I think it was in Vegas, right?
Yeah, same thing. We're doing it in Vegas again. Yeah,
man, the amount of the variety of people you have, it starts with the following, right? Like you guys created. Through Legion of Skanks, like just this audience, right? That was just like ride or die with all you guys.
The beautiful thing is, like, it really is like they're comedy fans. I mean, they're definitely fans of Legion of Skanks, but through that, even in the bonfire, we've cultivated these fans who are like, I mean, obviously, some of them came from all the other, from Tony Hinchcliffe and all the different people. Ari moving to New York was the catalyst for all of it. Like, it that bridged the two worlds and everything like that. You know what I mean?
But
can't remember where I was going like a fucking idiot.
Oh, the festival, the audience.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So it's like they're just like, they'll come see me when I'm in town. They'll come see Tony Hinchcliffe or Brian Redband or Jeremiah. It's all just the same. They just love the world.
Yeah.
And they follow the soap opera of everyone's kind of friendships and stuff, which is awesome.
Is having a special, like how you said you've been sitting on this material for a minute.
Yeah.
Like, so it was... did you kind of have to, you know, really dust a lot of stuff off, or was it so ready to go that you were like, I'm going to kind of just...
When we were off those few months, I think 3 months was the longest I was doing no, at least road stuff, like a headline gig at all. And I remember it was the Indianapolis Helium. I remember getting on stage and being like, I didn't have like a starting point. I'm like, I had something about girl cops. I think they suck. It was... fill in the blanks there, I guess. Yeah, it was really, it took like tags. You have to find out, it goes, hey, how come you're not still doing that whatever bit? And I go, because I didn't even know I had it until you just said it right there. Yes, I will bring that back.
Wow.
Yeah, I never write anything down, and I
how
hate
come?
Hearing my own voice.
Oh, gotcha.
So I never listen to the...
Gotcha.
And if
it's
I write it down,
memory,
my writing it down is like, it'll become too robotic. That waitress... rolling her eyes at that comedian doing the thing really affected me. I'm like, I never, ever want that. And I said before, it was like you said, Greg Giraldo, Patrice, Dave Attell, I just watched as a young comic, like, you see the staff actively try hard to not be bothered so they can sit and watch. And other comics come in and watch. I thought that was the coolest thing.
I love that you said all three of those guys.
Yeah.
Giraldo was my favorite comic. Still is.
Yeah.
Got to just work with him once, him and Jesse Joyce at the Irvine Improv. Was so nice the whole time. That's also where I met Attell. Schumer was featuring for him there when I was hosting. This was, you know, years ago. And Patrice as well was, and which is, it's so funny that you said that was the first influence. And when I was kind of, you know, putting you in that same world, I was going to get to that because that for me was the first headliner I saw at the Punchline San Fran do a full hour.
Patrice.
I'd seen spots at clubs, and this is about a year before I started. And I see him sit down for almost 2 hours, just have this brilliant material, but then have 3 to 4 to 5 crowd things and weave them all together throughout the whole show. And I remember having my mind blown, being like, that is like, I think the show I want to do. And it's not what I do. It's, you know, and why I loved watching you early on, where it's like, oh man, because the way that keeping people engaged like that and making it feel like just a hang and conversational and being so savvy that you can go in and out of your material from crowd work or into crowd work and have people go, was that part scripted or whatever? And you're like, well, it wasn't. But the part right after, it's a bit that I was maybe going to do tomorrow or later. Right. But because of what just happened.
I do have to do that outside of the show sometimes. They're always like, that was off the cuff, huh? Yeah. Like, no, not all. Like,
yeah.
He's like, you think that layered bit about whatever was like, no, I wish I was that much of a genius.
But guess what? Sometimes those things do happen, right? Because you're so dialed in and... Yep. And
well, I think it's the thing with crowd work now, especially because it's getting exhausted online.
Yeah.
Apparently everyone's doing that.
That sucks.
It's a TikTok, like all that stuff. And I'm like, well, that sucks because you have to like, for it to be good, like, and I don't think I'm like the end all be all of crowd. I think there's plenty of people who do crowd work phenomenal. I'm just like, what they do is like, it's layered. Their mind's operating the same as if they were writing a joke. So you're thinking of like, what's going to be the funnier word?
Yes.
You know, that's like. That was an interesting thing, too. It was always like the picking in pieces of people that I admired something about them. Like I said, it was like Dane Cook when I first started. I'm like, Dane Cook to me, just like I watched him enough, thought he was funny enough to know. I go, okay. Saying a bubbly soda is funnier than saying getting a drink. Getting a diet Shasta is funnier than saying whatever. Beverage is funnier than soda. And like.
Yeah.
The interesting thing of that, you know, and all those, and Patrice taught me what I thought was so important. Was he sitting down? Obviously, by the time you saw
Whole
him
time.
Like, sitting on stage.
Oh yeah, it's 2006. So,
I remember watching that change in him, and I don't know if he even like ever vocalized it, but it's definitely what I saw happen and why I think he got more comfortable. And I have this also with Patrice is that we're both harsh, probably in different ways, but like I'm not like an idiot. I don't. I hate that when the comic goes, "Oh, you guys can't handle it!" It's such a cop out thing to do. You guys can't. It's like they can all handle it. It's got to be by the way you present it.
They're adults. Take
and
some responsibility.
I just noticed the same thing. Like if you're going to be that kind of harsh with material and kind of say whatever you want to say, when you're a big, just present size wise, like me and Patrice both were, the difference between looming over an audience and kind of like the simplicity, like "Are you guys a couple?" like still feels like the audience is like. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
To sitting towards the off stage a little bit, like back a little further on the stage and just sitting and kind of like, they come to you. So that's what I said. It's the difference between going like, you ever suck his dick in the car ever versus going like, you ever blow him in the car. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, it just takes this thing out of them. Where like, and when you go, do you ever do this? Is when you get more of a chance of going like, that's a little personal. But if you go, it goes, has this guy ever like come on your back and then you went to the store with it still there? They're like, I don't think so. You know, like, go start answering it.
Yeah.
You're like, people go, how do you get people to answer those questions? I go, I don't know. I have no idea. Just
make
ask them.
Comfortable. Yeah. But people, I mean, just the way you would, approach somebody at a fucking barbecue or
you don't
want to,
like, shock. Out of the gates. Hey, who's this asshole? You're like, whoa.
I appreciate that insight, man. I was always curious how you went about your, engaging with people.
Yeah, but that was exactly watching Patrice do that, just seeing that difference of like, because he's always going to like, rock some people and people leave still. I have that a bunch of people leaving shows like, this isn't what I thought. But like, it became much less. And I think that's when people started really falling in love with him because he was giving you that like, and then his jokes were becoming more like, I have diabetes, I got all this shit. And like, he was so good, man. I couldn't. He'd either be in jail right now or be leading a cult.
Patrice?
Yeah. He'd either have a cult of people or he'd be in jail for who knows what terrible thing he would have said.
You think he'd have a podcast?
Play the devil's chords. Yeah. Yeah, without a doubt. I think he would definitely have a podcast.
Geraldo too, right? I feel like.
Yeah. And I think they would have really loved the evolution of the game where it's like Patrice would have loved like no one being able to tell him what to do. You know, you can go behind a paywall. You can do whatever you want to do and just kind of like, they could demonetize you, but he didn't give a shit about that. It was more like, can I say whatever the fuck I want to say?
Totally. Greg too, right?
And it would have been great, yeah.
And not having to rely, at least in my knowledge of for Greg, like having to need to get a show or something to like, he would have been doing all around, going on Rogan. He would have done everybody. He would have been a staple of that, I think, at Burr's level, in my opinion.
Oh, he would have been on Rogan constantly.
Yeah,
like Rogan would have loved him.
Just doing everything. Stern. Like, he just would have stayed in that.
Opie and Anthony would be together. Yeah. I mean.
Regis and Kathy Lee would have never broken apart. Regis wouldn't have died.
Seacrest would be out.
I met Seacrest. He hosted a game show that I went on my freshman year of high school.
I bet he's just the sweetest.
Well, I ran into, here's the thing, I ran into him at that game show, and then we both were backstage at a Dave Matthews Band concert. Yep.
Nice.
And love me some DMB. And we're both.
Yeah, you're just selling some helium balloons or whatever.
We're both nitrous. Very baked. And it was in the family friends, like, buffet food drinks where the band would come kick it with you, and then they're going to go get ready, and you can stay there, you can whatever, and I'm there with a couple buddies, and I see Seacrest, and I'm like, he hosted the show I was on as a freshman in high school called Click, and 2 years later, he's like, welcome to America, and I was like, get the fuck out of here.
Wow.
That's a big jump. So I go up to him, and right away, I can tell his eyes are cashed, so I was like, awesome, because I'm going to bring it up at some point, because I'm also very high, and this will kind of just even the playing field. And so I go, hey, man, and we're also in this area, so I feel like you got grounds to approach. And I go, dude, Click, underrated show. And he just goes, almost spits up his food, and he goes, wow. He goes, that is a deep cut. He goes, how do you know Click? I go, I was on it. I go, you don't remember me? And then I go, I had that girl who fucked up all my chances at winning a Casio keyboard, and I think you guys gave away 10 grand. And he's like, wow, that was a time. And I go, yeah, and then you went from that to Idol. He goes, yeah, yeah, I go, it's fine, dude. I'm also super high. And then he goes, okay, thanks. And then I go, good to meet you. See you later. And I should have said Seacrest out when I walked away.
You should
away,
have twisted his mind and leaned in and been like, where's Ryan? Where's Brian Dunkelman?
Oh, yeah. What'd you do to him?
Yeah, where's Dunkelman at?
Where's Dunkelman at? But mean it and commit.
I love the Dunkelman quit American Idol. He's like, I don't want to be pigeonholed in this.
Dear God.
What are you, insane?
Maybe the number one blunder if we're playing Family Feud.
That's
like
a biggie.
That's a big one.
Real biggie.
Dunkelman, if you don't know, he was with Idol hosting the first season. I think just said, I don't want to be pigeonholed.
He was the stage host and Seacrest was the
main
or
host.
No, I think they flipped that. I think Seacrest was the stage face guy and Dunkelman was doing like the what Seacrest started becoming funny at was the after thing interviews.
Yes.
And then he was just like, I don't want to do a whatever.
What am I mean? Yeah, Paula Dole was on this? You're like, that should
for
be
him to watch
day.
Almost the same story too, where it was like, you know, Rogan, I always loved like yeah, they started doing some of that cage fighting like down the street from my house. They were like, you want to come be the announcer?
Yeah.
He goes, they just gave me $600 million. I'm like, Brian Dunkelman, I believe. It's not a dig, but I think it's just, I think he's like drives Uber currently.
Wow.
I think, yeah.
Do you think he brings the story up?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, funny story. Back there, they go, sir, I clicked preference no conversation. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Kelly Clarkson on the speaker goes, you guys want to hear a funny story?
Yeah,
he goes, I got hey, you guys want to hear a funny story? He goes, no. And turn the air up.
Her and Justin Guarini didn't like each other on season one. Like, again, man, shut the fuck up. Turn the air up.
And he goes, yeah, my favorite was Fantasia. And he goes, that wasn't my season. Somebody asks him questions he doesn't know.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
What's Clay Aiken like? Goes, I don't know. I left. Is William Hung as nice as I think? I don't know.
Does Sanjaya always wear that thing on his head?
I wasn't. Does Sanjaya, that was the funny. So Louis, Jay Gomez,
oh, yeah.
Before we were doing the podcast, where I met Louis, he was producing his own shows, and he ran ticket sales crews. The only in the game, will I always say, honest. They looked the part. They looked like little fucking meth addicts. and they were just street kids, but he made them learn that. So there was like the young batch of comics coming up at the time, which was but working a little bit, but not that much.
Yeah,
and it was like me, DeRosa, Metzger,
yeah,
Mike Vecchione, all these like killers. Young comics that were just like but coming up, but there was just so many people ahead of
right.
us. And he would put us on. Lewis put us on his shows, excited because we're the young guys that he thinks is like this is cool.
Yeah.
And he would teach his street team to, instead of doing what everyone else is like, you know, oh, Richard Pryor is going to get on stage with Seinfeld tonight over there. And people are like, well, I'm from Oklahoma, sure. He would be out there pitching names that no one heard of before. We'd be like, Kurt Metzger, oh, man, he's got this thing about this, and he's from this. And they would really pitch. So it was the first time as young comics when we got on stage, the audience was like, like, you know, you'd see their being said, they go, oh, they told me this guy's like,
whoa.
Said, and that was such a smart move to do that. The point of that was Lewis with the street teams.
Elliot? No, what was the name?
Brian right Dunkelman.
No, but that. Yeah. Well, yeah, it was something about, oh, yeah, Sanjaya.
Oh.
By the way, it always comes back to Sanjaya.
Those, so Lewis is like crew of guys.
Yeah.
At one point, they just bumped, after he was already on the show, Sanjaya, and he just dug stand-up comedy and started just coming around a bunch and just being at all of Lewis's shows. Sanjaya from American Idol. And his street kids all thought Sanjaya, because he was, I think, getting a little bit of like attention. You can get a couple girls to walk over and be like, it's the Indian kid from American Idol.
Fuck yeah. I think he was a top fiver.
And that, oh, yeah. Well, that was all Howard Stern.
Yeah.
That was a Howard Stern joke.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think he was like not a good singer at all.
No, no, it wasn't great.
But he would hang out for a while. And it is funny, when I was, because I was still a pretty young comic, fame was like everything. You know, I said this, I think, on a podcast earlier, but rather than Philly or South Jersey, when we moved to South Jersey, the kid across the street just lived in a townhouse with his mom also. He was in a Fruit Loops commercial. And like, you might as well just told me Denzel Washington's living across the street. I'm like, what is a TV camera like? And isn't it funny being in, like, you know, you've been in, like, big films and stuff.
Yeah.
What you see on the screen, you might have did Hustlers, probably the biggest movie, or one of the only movies, if not the biggest thing I've ever done.
Awesome.
In a movie like that. And, like, it's when you see the movie come out, you're like, it's not how it felt that day.
Totally.
Like, it felt like we were sitting around a bunch, and everyone was tired and bored, and J-Lo did not want to talk to me, it seemed like, and... She couldn't wait to get out of there, and Cardi B was frustrated because somebody was late or whatever. Yeah. No idea who Lizzo is at the time, and she's, I think I go, well, that's very brave of her to be naked on that stage,
sure.
Because yikes. I admired her bravery for sure. It is funny to make so many fat jokes about somebody who I also feel such empathy for when things happen. Do you remember Lizzo at of the award shows a few years ago? I don't know if it was MTV Awards or whatever, but the whole floor was screens. It was like video screens,
okay.
The floor. And she starts jumping for one of her songs, and you just, all you see is just like a dead spot like happen on like the screen. Because it's all, you know, it's probably, floor is like, you know, 70 of the, like, you know, big screen TVs,
yeah.
Basically. And she just, and jumping, you just see like the dead spot happen on. You're like, oh, poor Lizzo.
Snap, crackle, pop.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go on the radio the next day and trash her and make a zillion fat jokes about it. But also, I always say, no, when I see it, though, I go, that's why I wouldn't jump on a video stage. It will happen to me.
No Dance Dance Revolution in your routine.
Oh, I'll stand for 5 hours before I sit in a wicker chair and have me be the asshole. You're not going to have everybody be like, oh, you guys missed it. Jay went home early because he was humiliated. He hurt his ass bone falling through a wicker chair. I told him that my fat uncle sits in it all the time.
Dude, you're a fucking beast. And,
thank you, man.
A real treat to have you.
This is awesome. Thank you
for having me. Special is Dog Belly, April 5th, YouTube. You got to watch it. I want to close this out with a 10-questionnaire inside the Actor Studio. Get to know Big J. Okerson a little bit better. RIP James Lipton. You no doubt would have been on the show. I'm going to feed you some questions that James fired at his guest to close the show out.
Sure.
And I'll be Lipton and you'll be Big J. Here we go. Welcome back to the show. Me with Big J. Okerson. Jay, what is your favorite word?
I think it's fuck.
What is your least favorite word?
I was going to say no, but that sounds so dangerous to say. No, I hate it so much I won't even accept it.
What turns you on?
Calm.
What turns you off?
Crowds. big crowds.
Big crowds.
Like being in them. I mean,
gotcha.
Like being like any.
Yeah, not on stage.
Everyone keeps asking me, I'm going to the Super Bowl, which is very crazy exciting.
Amazing. I'm going to be down there, but
yeah,
I'm not going. I'm doing a watch party at CB Live. Pretty close. That's amazing. Have you ever been?
A couple blues are over there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
in
yeah.
Scottsdale.
Next to the club?
At CB Live.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
there's one in Scottsdale.
The one next to
the
Stand-Up
Live.
Live.
Yeah, yeah. Have you ever been?
Stand Up Live?
No, to the Super Bowl.
No. Oh, no, Super Bowl? Never. And
this is your team, baby.
It's my team's in it. And, yeah, Bert Kreischer asked me the other day, he's like, you want to go? And I was like, my mom's supposed to come up to New York and watch the game. I mean, she hasn't seen my apartment yet. And he's like, you really don't want to go? And I'm like, I mean, I want to, but, like, it's so, you know, it's this. And I have to get some new clothes or more clothes sent because I didn't pack for the 2 extra days. And,
yeah.
And he's making a face like, come on. I go, I'll ask my mom. If she says I should go, I'll go. And I call my mom, and she was like, are you asking me or telling me? I'm like, I'm asking you. Like, she's like, yes. Like, what are you, crazy?
Oh,
of course,
good for her.
So
that's amazing. Bro, yeah, I'm so pumped for you. I've been to 2-1 was my team, the Seahawks, against the Broncos when we destroyed them.
Yeah.
When your team's playing, it's awesome. When they're not, it's still very cool, but it's awesome when it's your team.
But so I know it's going to be a crowded thing, but I know Bert's going to, like, I know we'll have, like, our area
to be
not worried about that. Everyone keeps asking me before I was even going to the Super Bowl, like, already book it, man. That Tuesday or Wednesday, this parade in Philly. And when I hear that, I'm just like, I can't think of a circumstance where I'd want to go. Not that I don't like the sentiment of it, but I'm like,
no,
I don't like that. A lot of people drunk. Like New Year's Eve, all the years I've lived in New York, I haven't even had around
once.
The idea of standing on the peripheral. Of
Yeah, it's a lot. All right. What sound or noise do you love?
Sound or noise? I know the ones I hate. Love? Sound. Let me think. Oh, yeah. Food sizzling.
Oh, yeah. Good answer. What sound or noise do you hate?
Oh, so many. There's so many. Yeah, like, this is a good from, so as a kid, I remember the sound of broom or rake on concrete.
Fuck that.
Yeah.
That's a red flag.
Oh, someone scratching or broom. And I've done it. If I'm doing it, it's fine. If I hear somebody, like, sweeping concrete behind me, it's like, it makes
it's like farts. Cold.
Yeah. Yeah, your own's fine. Yeah. I relish in it.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Oh, man, musician would be so great.
Right.
I envy.
What
I
instrument?
Really, guitar, if I could.
Yeah.
Particularly, and if not guitar, piano.
I was just going to say piano for you, man.
Yeah, I play drums in the most novice way. I can, play the beat of a song and have fun with that.
That's cool.
But, I really wish I... Again, as time moves on and you get older, you realize how it's a fun thing to explain to my daughter through everything. When every time she's like down about something or whatever, I go, it's all so inconsequential. None of it means anything. And if I'm like, I couldn't tell you what I was doing the times instead of just picking up the piano or instead of just picking up the guitar.
Totally.
And I didn't push my daughter either in that direction. I'm like, I really wish one thing I would have been like, you know what? I know you don't like it right now, but just learn the piano. Just learn it and...
Totally.
And you just have it.
Just to have it in your pocket. It's cool to be an adult and have just a bag of fucking snacks of, like, life little, like, oh,
like
shit.
Like a dumbass. I got my girlfriend, Christine, I got her a... What's his name? Tim Armstrong from Rancid. Hmm. Like, version acoustic guitar. It's beautiful. Hanging in our house. She doesn't play. I don't play. She's like, we both can noodle, but, like, it's nothing worth anything. Not even like, hey, I'm going to play this song right now. It's, you know, it's like, hey, you ever hear the first three notes of, Hotel California? I know the first three chords, and I have to go, and then I go,
the true sign of a professional.
Yeah, I'm terrible. So two guitars
yeah.
hanging up in my house, of which neither can be used, and a keyboard I bought my girlfriend. I said, I genuinely would, if I could be nice, just to go in the room and just like, I'm just going to fucking play piano.
Jam to yourself.
I wish.
What profession would you not like to do?
Manual labor. Those days are over.
Yeah.
I did all that, wheelbarrowing concrete. Everything I did was kind of laborious.
Wow.
I never, weirdly enough, I think I'm the only comic in the world, I've never, ever, ever worked in the service industry. Very strange. I never was a fast food, never, everything
you might
was,
be one of the few.
Everything was... babysitting, and when I would not babysit, it would be like manual labor. But the manual labor jobs also like paid more.
Yeah, totally.
So like instead of sitting around like all week, if I went out 3 days and did like wheelbarrowing concrete back and forth for a guy, construction guy, it was like a couple $100.
Awesome.
Versus like $100 to get zits from original chicken sandwiches.
Yeah, I did 2 days at Fleming's in downtown L.A., had a panic attack and palpitations because the fucking head chef was just like, he slammed down these butter squares and he goes, what the fuck are these, dude? And I go, butter. And he was like, are they? And I was like, he's like, new guy, fucking, and just kept calling me new. It was just too much. And then I brought over a fork for some guy's soup instead of the spoon. And he goes, do you mind if I get a spoon? And as a joke, I go, I try to make it work with the fork, dude. And then I go, no, go get the spoon. But my guy training me goes, dude, don't make jokes. Just go get the spoon. He goes, A, you're wasting time by having a little chit-chat, and B, what if he doesn't think that's funny? Now you've ruined his meal. I go, okay, I'm think I'm going to go back to Universal Studios and beg for my Wolverine claws.
If that ruins his meal, like, pull it together, bro.
Yeah.
My the worst actual job I'd say I ever had, when I worked at a day, thank God. Oh, my Jewish mom really came through on this one. Just all the Jewish mother came out of her. She's like, my baby doesn't have to go back there. I did the 3 days of video watching and, like, you know, don't finger girls at work training for UPS.
Oh, yeah.
But UPS, because that was always, again, in a blue-collar world, they're always like, you know, UPS drivers, like, six figures a year or something.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, but you have to work your way through UPS. And the first thing is standing in the back of an 18-wheeler while a conveyor belt that they have put in there fires boxes at you. And you have to build, not only do you have to build, like, Tetris perfect walls with them, everyone you have to check against a paper you have with 40 zip codes on it. And you're supposed to look at every package's label and make sure it's one of those zip codes. I mean, I didn't build one part of the wall coming forward before. I mean, and then by the time it was like four boxes deep to pile, it was me just like kicking boxes. And I just went home with like black lung after one night. And I was like, Mom, I'm sneezing up black stuff. She's like, you don't have to go back there. You should never go back there.
You want a FedEx family now.
You want to babysit your brother and sisters again? I'm like, I do want to do that.
Mortal Kombat and vanilla ice cream is your future tonight.
I get to play video games when they sleep.
Oh, that's such a good mom. My mom was the same way. So they shot boxes out of like a tennis ball machine.
No, not like that. No, it was just like, it was someone.
I thought they were shooting boxes at you like military training.
Someone at the top of this crazy machine they're doing is sorting and sending down these like chutes. And when it's something that's supposed to be in my truck, it comes down the chute and it hits a conveyor belt and but it never.
Gotcha.
Like Lucy, you know, the Love Lucy thing.
Yes, yes.
So by the time you're like, okay, I'm a little about four boxes behind, but I could check him and build that wall. And then before you know it, there's 10 bucks. Then they're falling off the side. Then they're falling off the side before they even get inside the truck.
Oh my God.
And it's just like, I'm in high anxiety. And man. That was all of it. I'm getting excited to think about it now. I'm like, those boxes I go.
Triggering.
Because I know, like I have right now, my girl overnighted me my Eagles jersey so I could have it for the game to the hotel. And in my mind, I'm like, if I was responsible for that box getting here, like that person would be going to the Super Bowl without their, like, thank God someone does that job right, because.
They'd be wearing, they'd have to Brandon Walsh it, you know?
Yeah.
And adjust.
Is Jay wearing a vest to the Super Bowl? He goes, what? Whoa.
You get on Diamond Vision and that's your all right, last question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
That's that funny dude. He doesn't have to know my name. Just remember me from something.
Nice!
Yeah, the same reaction Kenan Thompson had to me yesterday.
Very cool. There's that funny dude?
It was cool. No, it was that funny. He was like, that's one of those cool ones, but I have those moments once in a while, like, just because I've been doing it so long.
Yeah.
I've never met Kenan Thompson before, and like, Marcel, the kid is on it, the new kid, introduced me to him, and he like cut myself, and he's like, man, I'm a big fan of your stuff, and I was really like, yo,
bro,
I got to call home tomorrow. I had that. My daughter is great because she's so unaffected, like by it all.
Yeah.
And I remember showing her a picture of a Doja Cat was at the Comedy Store one night, and afterwards she was like, yo, you were so funny, that was my favorite to watch tonight. I was like, oh wow, go cut take a picture to send to my daughter. It's gonna blow her mind. She was like, absolutely. So we took a picture. I sent it to my daughter. She doesn't answer, but it was like 2 in the morning in New York, so I was almost like, it is pretty late, but she's 20. So I called her, and I go, hey, and she answers. She goes, hey, what's up? And I was like, did you see the picture I sent you? She goes, yeah, of you and Doja Cat? And I was like, yeah. And she goes, yeah. I was like, aren't you excited? She goes, you want to be excited that you met Doja Cat? And I was like, I guess you're right. Hey, enjoying being home? I'm doing all this fun shit without you.
That's so fucking funny, dude. Can't wait to watch the special.
Oh, thank
Dog
you,
Belly,
man.
April 5th, YouTube, Legion of Skanks podcast. You guys are still jamming.
Yes,
and Bonfire on Sirius XM Radio. And at Big J Ogerson on all the social media.
Yeah.
You're a beast, dude.
I love you, bro.
I love you
so
too,
much,
man. Thanks for making time.
I'm Tommy Fite.
And I'm Mercedes Javid.
And we're the hosts of Till the Dirt.
On our show, we talk about life.
Your life.
Our life.
Relationships.
Your relationship.
Our relationship.
You may already know us from Bravo's Straws of Sunset, but there is still so much more to be told and tea.
Listen to Till the Dirt on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.